It's been proven to be true, like one and one are two. It's checked and double checked, a fact that can be backed. Because it is a scientific fact. It's a scientific fact that there are belts of radiation in outer space which are a hazard for future space flyers to overcome. It's a scientific fact.
A scientific fact.
Hello and welcome to the Hellbound Alley program. I'm your host, Alley, and he is...
Frank.
And we also have our good friend Zachary Moore with us here today. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm doing good.
Great.
Yeah. Zachary has already been on two shows before, right?
Yeah. Wait a minute, three.
Well, we had the molecular proof of evolution, and then we had
with
him
Jack Curtin.
With Jack Curtin.
Yeah.
And I was also on the
That's right. Oh, yeah. He came on in a pinch when we lost a different guest.
Yeah, so that's right. We were supposed to have James, but he couldn't be on.
So anyway, what's going on this week? Besides the winter coming early to Montreal.
Yes, we seem to be getting alternate days of snow on the ground, no snow on the ground.
It's just constantly snowing and
strange.
Melting.
So I don't know if I should put my shoes on or my boots on.
Well,
say.
It's definitely Christmas. It's definitely Christmas here. You know, there's no big holiday separating Halloween and Christmas around here. So
right.
Just it's there. It's everywhere. There's no escaping. Plus tomorrow is
it knows where you live.
Tomorrow is Canada's Macy's parade. Basically,
yeah.
So tomorrow is the opening of the big Christmas season here, and I don't know if I can handle that much time, but
yeah,
I'll go with the flow. What the heck?
Yeah, but no, the temperature is nice.
Today is good, but anyway, let's move on from the weather.
Well, I have a new blog.
Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, yeah, Aaron and I, as you know, are libertarians.
What? You didn't tell me.
Well, it's not a surprise to our listeners. And we're kind of disappointed by the absence of libertarian blogs out there. There are a lot of libertarian blogs that are supposed to be libertarian but are right-wing or pro-war
or religious,
anti-abortion or Christian, all that sort of thing. So
yeah, anti-abortion libertarian, how does that work?
Well, you know, it's really, to me, I find it really unjustifiable. I don't see how anyone can be against abortion except as religious dogma. I really... It's very hard for me now to see any credibility in those arguments.
Well, I mean, I've been around, I've looked at libertarian blogs and message boards, and they're also heavily anti-immigration.
That's another
thing.
They're
really...
Definitely.
They really have a lot of right-wing politics, and they say they're libertarians, but...
I can understand being anti-immigration slightly. I can give it a little credibility, but abortion...
No credibility.
I really can't. But, yeah, so we've started our blog called The Radical Libertarian. It's at radicallibertarians.blogspot.com. And we have five people on it right now. There's me, Aaron, Niels, who hosts our live show. And there's Brad, who's been on the show before, and Andrew Green, who's also been on the show. That's funny.
Cool.
For Aaron, Brad, and Andrew.
And Brad, of course, who's in a number of the audio plays as Johnny Virtue.
Oh, yeah, he's really good as Johnny Virtue. And
we'll be hearing more from Brad.
Yeah, definitely. So we've started. I mean, I've made a few posts. And we're also thinking of having our own carnival eventually. Because, as you know, blogs have their carnivals already. That kind, but where they have posts from all sorts of blogs.
Yeah, there's the Carnival of the Godless, what's it called? There's two atheist carnival blogs
out
there. Yeah,
Carnival of the Godless and God or Not.
God or Not, right. And you guys should check that out because they choose posts from several atheist blogs and you can get it all in one. And
yeah, I've been sending in submissions for a while and it's very good. It's very good for my blog, I guess. It's going very well. It's just useful for everyone, I guess.
Definitely.
Getting people to read other people's blogs and getting
generating
a topic.
Traffic.
Yeah, no, you know, just getting a topic together and so on. I mean, there are different ways of doing it, so we don't know what we're going to do yet, but it's just interesting.
That'll be really interesting. I hope you find more libertarian pieces that you can get in your carnival.
Well, we have a few blogs already on our links. So.
You know, speaking of blogs, one of my favorite blogs out there is Jaywalk. It's j-walk.com. And lately he's been posting at least one atheist piece every day.
Oh, yeah.
And his, he's extremely popular. It's
he's
a huge,
huge
blog.
Yeah, definitely. So it's like seeing him turn atheist.
Well, he hasn't turned atheist, but his blog is getting more atheistic. And it's interesting because he has a lot of believers who read his blog, and I think it's pretty brave of him to
Yeah, definitely, because he's going to lose a lot of people.
He might not, but they're getting read. His
I mean,
posts
if he had turned
read.
Christians, I wouldn't be, interested.
But there's a lot of interest in the comments. The comments are starting to heat up quite a bit. They're complaining a lot right now, but some of the posts of his atheist posts are getting, like, 84 comments on them, so it's really interesting. You've got to check out that one, because he's always got something interesting to look at, and he pretty much posts all day long, so I don't know what his day job is, but I hope he continues.
It's very interesting. I mean, that guy just updates like a machine. He's really
from morning to tonight, and there's
crazy.
Always something interesting, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
And he posts a lot of the best generators, which is a lot of fun. I found through him that Einstein generator. You can have Einstein write your message on his chalkboard.
Yeah. And another thing I wanted to mention before we start is that new anti-steroid policy by Major League Baseball.
New?
You probably heard that in the news. Yeah. They have bigger penalties now.
Right.
50 games first time, 100 games second time.
So third
time, I think, you get suspended.
So athletes and drugs, they were just talking about that on the last episode of House.
Yeah.
And they actually brought up some really good points, pro and con, about why we should be mad or not mad about athletes taking drugs.
To be honest with you, I don't see any con.
Right.
It's really maddening for me because, like the abortion issue, I see absolutely no credibility in what are supposed to be the arguments. I mean, they say that if some players take steroids, it hurts. It's not fair. Well.
Right, and so they're worried that if one athlete takes the drugs, it's going to get so hard to compete that they're all going to be pumped up on drugs. But the problem is, if they're that pumped up on drugs, dropping dead isn't exactly the best way to win a baseball game. So,
they say it's not fair. Well, it's not fair that one athlete gets to train more than another.
It's also,
that makes it unequal, too.
Right,
I mean,
right. They should stop training.
It's not fair that they eat different things. One food might have an advantage over another. We should make them eat all the same thing.
Right, it's interesting that this could apply everywhere. It's not fair that some people are smarter than others and get better grades in school.
Right, exactly.
It's not fair that they have a, you know, balanced meal and some others don't eat a balanced meal. And college students eat real good food.
I mean, some of these players had a better childhood. I think that's not fair.
Well, that's called...
psychologically...
It's called competition.
Yeah, but I mean, once you accept this notion of fairness, where do you end it? I mean, what...
Right, fairness...
What does it bring to the end product to do this? Nothing. It's a detriment.
Right. And they're going to have to figure out which drugs actually help them and which don't, because...
And I think they're only doing this, they're hurting their product, but they're doing it because that's what people want, because there's an anti...
Do you think that they are doing it to help
because
keep
of
players
the war on
from
drugs.
Dying because they're getting kids right out of
that's
high
ridiculous.
School and blah, blah, blah?
That's ridiculous.
That they're worried that people are going to be exploited by unscrupulous managers or something? Because that's always the question. It's exploitation that we're worried about, right? Because they're not smart enough to understand and all this stuff.
Well, what about you, Zachary? Do you see any good arguments for this?
Well, it's
because
tough.
I really
Actually,
don't.
My younger brother is an athlete, and
yeah.
I don't know precisely to what extent he dabbles with steroids. I know there are some either pseudo steroid products that he used.
Interesting.
I bet there's a lot of pseudoscience in that industry of supplements and...
Yeah, well, a lot of stuff isn't regulated, first of all. That's why they can get away with saying, make a lot of claims that they really can't back up scientifically.
True.
But,
true.
You know, it's tough. It's like, there's arguments for and there's arguments against, but I mean, I think ultimately it comes down to first choice, you know, what they're willing to do. I mean, if they
absolutely
want to be, if they, you know, if something will help them be a better athlete, and that's, and they're willing to do, you know, they're willing to face whatever repercussions there are physically or whatever, that's their choice.
You know, it's interesting because it comes down to just the basic idea of being a pro athlete to begin with. I mean, people have to make a choice
right.
about what they're going to do with a tiny portion
exactly.
of their youth to turn themselves into this machine, and then it's all going to be over.
Exactly.
I mean,
do you think being an athlete is good for the body? I mean, that's ridiculous.
It's like the people who train for the Olympics, they've talked about this, you know, the
yeah.
gymnasts who, they have to give up their life to choose this other value, but
I mean,
it's really only going to last them, I mean, 10 years at most when you think about it. There's really a 10-15 year period that they really
right.
have that chance to shine, especially with Olympic athletes.
Yeah, my brother had, I mean, he's no longer, quote-unquote, an athlete. He's had both his knees replaced. He really can't participate anymore. But, you know, he was aware of that. He actually had one knee replaced, continued to play. He was a football player. Continued to play until he got the other one. And it just didn't matter to him.
Well, I just think it's hypocrite that we glorify athleticism and we glorify the professional athlete and all the things they do to their body.
Of course, we've always done
and on
that.
The other hand, we're saying that them taking steroids is bad.
Right,
I
that's
think.
True. Well, it's yeah. the same thing happens in the beauty industry. It's like we glorify the beautiful women, yet we also can't believe that they're snorting cocaine and smoking cigarettes and becoming anorectic. And that
or that they have plastic surgery done.
Exactly. Of course, the plastic surgery is a whole other issue because there's some monsters being created right now.
Mm.
But I mean, we're always going to glorify youth, I think. I mean, it's what evolutionary, you know, that the whole exaggeration of all of those things about youth that we love, yet at the same time we're smart enough to understand that it's something that lasts you, you know, between like 16 and 30. That's it, you know. Well, with athletes, at least some of them are able to stick around until they're 35, maybe.
Yeah.
I just saw John McEnroe in a tennis tournament the other day. It was kind of sad to watch.
Yeah, depending on the sport, you know, some of them are able to stick around longer. There's some hockey players that stick around quite longer.
Of course, that's not a person's life, you know. It's like, it's such a small part of a person's life. It's just, I don't know.
All right.
We're going to move on.
This show is available on Free Thought Radio every Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 7 p.m. And every evening on the Hellbound Alley station. And we have a live show every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, and visit our website at hellboundalley.com and email us at allie@hellboundalley.com. That's ALLEE.
Yes, our topic today is rationalism and pseudoscience.
Hooray.
So I guess we should start by explaining what the hell is rationalism and what the hell is pseudoscience. Because I guess people have a general understanding of what they mean. But I think we need something a bit more specific. For example, the word rationalism, you know, people tend to associate that with being rational.
I hope they don't associate with the word rationalize.
Right, exactly. But in philosophy, the word rationalism has another meaning. Basically, it's usually opposed to empiricism. So there's this idea of empiricism being someone who trusts only the senses, only what they get directly from the senses, and rationalism being open to other sources.
Basically, I get it. So it is like rationalize.
Basically, rationalism is not based on the senses per se. There's a part of the reasoning that is based on so-called pure logic. For example, Aristotle was a rationalist. And, for example, I forgot how many teeth you said a horse has.
Oh, right. You and know, they just logically figure out how many teeth a horse, and forget looking in the mouth.
Instead of just looking, you know? Yeah. Well, rationalism is, well, you try to figure things out by pure logic, by simplistic principles. Like, for example, I remember someone else, I tried to figure out how many moons the planets had, and then tried to fit it into a mathematical progression, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, etc. That sort of thing. Or, as we're going to talk about homeopathy, like cures like, that's another rationalist principle.
I'm just thinking supplements.
What's
pseudoscience and supplements. We were talking about steroids and herbal steroids and...
Yeah.
You'll find a lot of pseudoscientific language in those websites that sell those things.
Well, I am an empiricist. I don't think there's any other means, fundamental means of knowing things except by the senses, but I think our senses, the word senses and the word empiricism, is just a label to designate what we know. You know, how we know. Because all we have is the senses. Our access to reality is called the senses. So it's like when we put a word on it, like empiricism, it makes it sound like it's just one domain out of many. It's like there's empiricism, then there's other idealism, then there's another thing. But no, we only have...
Why do you think so many people have such a problem with that?
Well,
the idea that our information comes from the senses. I mean, when you say only is a word that people use
a lot
when they talk about it, as if only,
but it's really
only the senses means that you're being closed-minded, which you are, but closed-minded in that sense of, you know, you're cold and soulless.
But I am closed-minded because the senses are all we are, are all we have by definition. That's what the word senses mean.
Exactly.
It's like...
But people have
it's a... kind of redundant to
people
use
react
word.
To that emotionally.
See, but the thing is, they think... Like I said, people usually contrast empiricism with rationalism. They think that empiricism is limited to... They think that because empiricism is limited to the senses, that somehow we can't have any knowledge beyond what we see directly around
they
us.
Mistake,
for example,
of course, they mistake... Their mistake is that they think that the senses are only sight.
For example, I have a post here from Usenet. A person talking about how, why empiricism is wrong, which I think illustrates my point. Do you wanna
okay.
read it?
But you're gonna make it big for me there. A majority of what you accept too true has no basis in empiricism, unless, of course, the TV, the newspaper, books, and hearsay can be classified as empiric sources. Does China exist? How do you know? Have you been there? Is that empiricism? If you've been to China, please don't lose my point. How many of you have been to the moon? Does Barbara Streisand actually exist, or should she? But maybe that's another discussion.
Well, I can see the moon, so that's one down already.
Right.
But the point here is that empiricism does not preclude logic, because logic is also empirical. I observe the laws of logic through the senses,
so
of course.
So if you're seeing stuff on TV...
I have no other way. I mean, I see television and newspaper and books. How can I... You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I perceive them, but I also evaluate their information. I read their information, interpret their information, because
well,
I understand language.
Seeing the movie on a clear day and hearing her Superman album, isn't that enough to know about Barbara Streisand? Or is that like, I mean, seeing her like presenting on the Oscars, is he saying that TV isn't empirical because it can be faked or something? And
because this person is basically a solipsist. Because what he's saying to me sounds like, if I don't perceive it directly, then it doesn't exist. It's like, if I turn my head away, the
it
object
goes away.
Disappears. It's like,
right.
That's not empiricism, that's solipsism. I'm not sure how to say it. It's basically subjectivist.
Yeah.
It's like, your point of attention is reality, and that's it. So,
now,
that's
idea of China, does China exist? How do you know? So, seeing China on TV and in movies is not...
Well, apparently, I'm, you know, it's like, do you believe there's a giant conspiracy to make you believe in China?
Well, right, that's
it's
interesting.
Silly, I mean, come on.
I mean, everything that you own is, half of it's marked made in China, and... But yeah, there would have to be some sort of giant conspiracy to pretend that there's a place called China. And when somebody you're talking to named Yu Lin says, I was born in China, Ni Hao.
No, you're lying.
Yeah.
It's like, do I observe China directly? No, but I do observe it. Mm-hmm. I have empirical evidence of it. There's no other kind of evidence anyway, so... But it's like, by using the word empirical, it makes it sound like...
That would be a good conspiracy. Like, they'd have to go to the airports and, like, make them have an airline to go to China, just, like, in order to fool people. But, so he's saying that's not empirical, that's just... What is it?
It's rationalist, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But, like I said, I think that's one reason why many people reject empiricism. I know that there are many objectivists who do, so, for that reason.
Strange.
Because of the dichotomy between empiricism and rationalism. But there is no dichotomy. At least that's what I think. We haven't let Zachary talk yet.
I wanted to ask if you think, what you were just saying, there is no dichotomy. Do you think there is, in fact, a way to synthesize the two?
Do I think there's a way to synthesize the two? No. Because I don't think, like I said, I don't think there's anything beyond empiricism. I mean, empiricism is just a term to me that means all the ways we have to know. I don't think there's anything beyond it. It's kind of like saying natural versus supernatural. It's like everything's natural. That's what that it's an absolute. You know, there's nothing beyond it.
Okay. But in your empiricism, you do use, you know, logic to arrive at conclusions.
Of course. Okay.
So is that like a subset of rationalism? Can we discard the aspect of rationalism that says this is?
No, because rationalism is supposed to be based on, quote, pure logic. But from my empirical standpoint, logic, the laws of logic are empirical.
Okay.
I perceive them as part of the nature of reality.
Right, so in your mind, there is no such thing as pure logic, so...
Exactly.
Talk about it as ridiculous.
Exactly. And it's basically a way of... Rationalism is basically a way of... trying to modelize things, which is good, but the problem is you're trying to modelize things without any evidence, without any testing. It's very good to have in mind the idea of making a model of the universe, and eventually we were able to make such models, but thanks to science and the tireless work of science throughout the centuries, not because of rationalism, you know. The truth was not in Aristotle's biology or in the alchemist's symbols, you know.
Right.
So it's a nice impulse to want to model things, but you shouldn't do it based on simplistic rationalist principles. And the second part of our topic is pseudoscience. Now, Zach, what is pseudoscience? Personally, what I would say simply is, pseudoscience is a belief that imitates scientific terminology, attitude, language, and it's a medic advantage to do so because science has gained such recognition that, would you agree with that approach?
Yeah, it's, pseudoscience is, I guess it's just enough like science to sound like science. It's science-y enough for the uninformed person, perhaps. And it sort of can fool a lot of people. And there's a lot of, a lot of direct marketing, a lot of late night television marketing that takes advantage of this, of the uninformed and uses pseudoscience to market and make money. There's a guy named Robert Park who wrote a book called Voodoo Science.
Yeah, I heard of that.
Yeah, and he listed 7 warning signs that if there's any question, if you're talking to somebody and they're making a claim and you think it might be pseudoscience, he said there's 7 warning signs that you can use.
Okay.
To distinguish pseudoscience from actual science. The first one is that discoverers make their claims directly to the popular media rather than to fellow scientists. So, you know, this would be, you know, if somebody comes up with something and they go right from the laboratory to an infomercial, that would be a very big clue that it's probably pseudoscientific. In science, when we come up with things, when we publish them in peer-reviewed journals, because we want our ideas to be criticized by others, and you know, we might think that we have a strong case for some finding or whatever, but we want to find out, you know, because we all recognize that, you know, there is subconscious bias, you know, that we, you know, every scientist, when they come up with a hypothesis, even though we know we're really not supposed to get too attached to them, we kind of do. You know, even if we don't really know that we are, it's often a subconscious thing.
Of course.
And so putting it out there for other scientists to look at and try to replicate and try to criticize is a way of keeping everybody honest, so to speak. And pseudoscience does not do that. It goes right to a magazine advertisement or right to an infomercial or something like that.
So would you agree that pseudoscience is a belief that adopts the form of science but not the substance?
Yes. He uses a lot of scientific language, but often incorrectly. Like I said, it's enough, just enough to fool the uninformed.
Such as the word energy.
Yeah. Energy, molecules, DNA. You know, it just picks up on these little buzzwords and it tries to impress people.
I said that because I know that Allison it's one of her pet peeves. But
it's an energy. Everything's an energy, isn't it?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah, absolutely. If you didn't have science, you wouldn't have that terminology and that kind of attitude towards reality.
Yeah.
You know, basically pretending to want to know more about reality and making these great discoveries and using these terms that have scientific sources. Like I said, personally, I think it's just science has become so important in our lives and so credible, more or less.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That it takes the form of science as a way to sell, basically. As a very powerful way. So.
Well, I think a lot of people are really sympathetic to the idea that the rigorous standards of science are unfair.
Right.
And that scientists are guys with beards and white lab coats that vote on things, and whoever they like gets to be right.
Like I said, it's science in form, but not in substance. It's not rigorous like science.
Right, okay. Yeah.
But they think the rigorousness is unfair, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like they have the idea that there's, like a cabal of scientists, you know, surreptitiously and,
the establishment,
like
yes.
That. Yeah, and they decide what's gonna be published and what's not.
And because they're men,
but the pseudos-
and they're white men, right? It's the white men kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's why they have, like, the idea of feminist science or whatever, like, or, you know, alternative science is another word I suppose you could use, as if there was such a thing.
But I'll end with this, the pseudo-scientific leader. Still places himself as part of this system, but he's a renegade.
Oh.
He's a renegade scientist, some call themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
They're the ones who are really searching for the truth, etc. So I think that's part of the form of science thing. But we have to go to the intermission. Why don't you go ahead and,
Okay, well, I stole this from a Catholic blog. And it's a piece of a Catholic blog, and I hope they're not listening, but I stole 2 minutes because I thought it was funny, and I messed around with it a little bit. But
I think it's horrible, personally.
Anyway, I'm not going to say who it is or anything, but they're going to talk a little bit about suffering.
Oh, dear. Okay. We'll be right back.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls. Take a deep breath. Relax.
Hi, Rob. I listened to your cast on the way back to the rectory from my day off. Really impassioned show. I will pray for Alan and his friend. Human suffering is inescapable, another reason to be Catholic. Most religions run from suffering or try to deny it. Catholicism says, embrace the cross. In the cross we have power. It transforms us. It makes us better people. It is redeeming and it has the power to redeem others. Without the cross, there is no resurrection. That is why I love Padre Pio. He was a man who knew how to suffer, and teaches us how to suffer. I'll pray for healing. The Lord is our mighty healer.
That's fantastic, and that's true. You know, one of the things when we were going through our conversion and reversion into the Catholic Church, was the concept of offering it up, offering up your suffering to our Lord. Basically saying, you know, that the burden is so heavy that I want to share that with you. I want to give this to you, Lord, because I cannot carry this load on my own. And the Catholic Church has a beautiful way, as Father Finelli had just mentioned, of handling suffering. It really is fantastic. So, you know, I don't know if you had any other thoughts on offering it up. I know that Father Come.
I was just going to say, we had a post from...
Michael.
And he is homebound.
Michael.
And he was saying that
Michael,
he would offer up his suffering,
Michael,
for Alan's friend on that day. And I think that's the amazing thing about
Michael.
And when you're suffering, to offer it up, to not think about yourself,
Michael,
to not concern yourself with what you're going through, but instead to think of other people,
Michael,
mm-hmm. to focus your prayers and your fasting or, you know, whatever, your attention on somebody else,
Michael.
Yeah, it is beautiful, you know, giving your suffering to our
Michael.
Our Lord.
Okay, intermission's over. The show must go on.
Michael. You guys don't even know what I'm talking about because you haven't heard this intermission. Anyway, what we were talking about before, what do you say when people come up with this gem? They say, well, how come you don't accept this particular pseudoscientific proposition? I mean, they laughed at the Wright brothers. They laughed at Einstein. You know, how come you can scoff at
the answer
free
is,
energy?
The answer is they also laughed at Bozo the Clown.
So,
and
they
laugh
your
at
answer.
They laugh at Gene Ray.
Yeah.
but see, no, the point is, well, gee, you know, maybe one day we're going to find out this or that.
Yeah.
But, of course, what we're talking about is...
Which, when you say that, automatically disqualifies a speaker, because he's not living in the future.
Exactly.
Obviously. So, he's by saying that, he's automatically saying that he's talking bullshit and he has no evidence.
Exactly.
If he has to invoke the future... No,
but
that's
what happens in religious conversations all the time. Maybe one day we'll find out more and we'll find out that God exists.
It's total bullshit. How do you know that we won't find more evidence against
pseudoscience? It's an excuse.
I'm not saying God because God is nonsense.
Every time somebody says, oh, they laughed at me at Masters and John, you know, remember everything you always wanted to know about sex but were afraid to ask? It was John Carradine. what is he, the uncle of Kung Fu? And
mm-hmm.
He said, they laughed at me at Masters and Johnson, but I showed them. And he made a gigantic breast that shot milk at the poor Woody Allen fleeing. So, you know, every time somebody says that to me, I think of a gigantic breast, so that's
funny. Whoa.
And John Carradine, which, you know, I don't know what I'd rather think about.
Night Train.
To Mundo Fine. Sorry, he's like my favorite actor now.
Yeah.
John Carradine is the best. And what were we talking about?
Talking about movies. There is a movie recently that has pissed Zachary off. It hasn't pissed us off because we haven't seen it and we have zero, in fact, we have negative intentions of seeing it. It's called What the Bleep Do We Know? It's,
Yeah, it came out, I think it came out a couple years ago, and, it played around mostly the small art house theaters, and I heard about it, I didn't hear a lot about it, I just heard that it was about, quantum mechanics.
Yeah. It's always about quantum.
It's always about quantum mechanics.
I thought, okay, you know, that should be an interesting movie. You know, quantum mechanics is not something that I really know a whole lot about. It's very confusing.
I say when they say quantum, you should turn around and run.
Oh, you naive Zach.
For most people. But anyway, I went there, and it's kind of an interesting movie, but it's pretty much all full of bullshit. Unfortunately.
No.
It's sort of told, it's half narrative and half documentary. There's a character played by Marlee Madeline, who is, I think she's like a photographer, and she's depressed or something like that, and I think she's having relationship troubles. I can't remember exactly what her crisis was.
Because he doesn't like her because she's deaf.
Right.
Go ahead.
But the whole crux of the movie was her trying to understand the nature of this other level of existence, where she's able to actually control her own life and make herself feel happy just by willing herself to be happy. They had a couple scientists on as sort of documentary guests, and they spent a little bit of time talking about quantum theory and how, you know, how weird it is. But they interspersed the scientists with really fruity people. They were a bunch of weird, sort of like new agey people. There's a chiropractor talking about how chiropractic makes people feel good. And what was really weird, there's a woman, and what was really strange about this movie is that they've got all these documentary subjects, and typically in a documentary, the first time you see somebody, there's a little caption at the bottom of the screen, it gives their name and what they do and why it's relevant to the documentary. In this movie, they didn't do that. These people just sort of appeared, and they weren't given any introduction.
Well,
one of the people was this woman, sort of middle-aged, you know, moderately heavy-set woman, with a really kind of garish makeup. She looks sort of like Ivana Trump, in a way. She was speaking in like a pseudo-East European slash German slash, it was really an odd accent, I couldn't quite place it, talking mostly about New Agey type stuff. And at the end of the movie, they show the people in sequence and then they introduce them, and it turns out that this woman is actually Jay-Z Knight. And the woman called Jay-Z Knight, her actual name is Judith Hampton. She was born in Toronto, Mexico, and she claims to channel a spirit called Ramtha.
Mm-hmm.
And Ramtha is supposed to be this 35,000-year-old warrior spirit from the lost continent of Atlantis who has mastered...
I love channelers.
You know, weird techniques of knowledge and existence and lives on a different plane and talks to this woman. And it turned out that most of the people connected with the movie, all the directors of the movie, were actually students of hers. She runs this weird New Agey School of Enlightenment.
Yelm Washington.
Yeah. And so that sort of was a strange ending to the movie. There was a lot more a New Agey spin on it. And basically, the thesis of the movie was you can create your own reality just by thinking it into existence. And that's basically what they had this character doing, played by Marley Matlin. And, you know, at first she was depressed. And they showed these little, one little funny thing from the movie that they're showing neurotransmitters as little cartoon monsters in the head. And at first they were, like, they were colored red and they were angry looking. And so that meant that she was depressed. And then all she had to do was think herself happy. And the red ones got taken over by little blue happy monsters, and then she felt great, and she was able to live her life. So, anyway, that's a very classic example of pseudoscience. And actually, one of the guys, Dr. David Alpert, who was a professor at Columbia University, was interviewed for the movie, and he was really upset when the movie came out because he talked for like 4 hours about mechanics, and they had specifically edited out the little choice tidbits that made it seem like he was agreeing with, you know, their idea that we can create our own reality.
Mm-hmm.
I
think that quantum mechanics is, in the New Age, is a perfect example of what we're talking about. Because
yeah, they latched on to the idea that, you know, things that observing something has an effect on how it acts, and they sort of, you know, put a whole different spin on it and placed a different scale on it and said, well, if that's true with subatomic particles, then that has to be true with
exactly
human relationships.
Because what happens was that the New Age movements are based on intersubjectivism. And when QM came, you know, that was a great boon for their pseudoscientific aspect, because you can draw conceptual, because QM really expanded the conceptual analogies that they could make. They finally had a conceptual analogy that they could make, saying that our minds change, create our lives.
Yeah. And then they get into that really offensive notion that you can cure yourself by thinking yourself out of having cancer, and
exactly.
And that the reason that you're sick and you have AIDS is because you wanted it in the first place. And
exactly, which
really,
is
really, really horrifically offensive.
Yeah,
stuff.
Of course it is. It is.
Yeah,
but
the thing,
yeah.
Another thing that there was that was featured in the movie pretty prominently that was that had spent about 5 minutes and they kept on reintroducing it throughout. There's a guy named Masaru Emoto, a Japanese guy, who takes pictures of disaster. I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy.
He takes pictures of what?
He takes pictures of water.
Oh, okay.
And what he does is he takes water and either plays music to it, offset it, thinks things at it, and then takes pictures
splash,
of the water.
I can see where this is going.
And he, you know, he makes the conclusion that, you know, basically what he does, he's got a website, it's kind of hard to visualize this over the radio, but he's really just taking pictures of ice crystals. You know, he must freeze the water somehow, and he takes a picture of a snowflake, and he says, look at this beautiful water, because he'll sing to it or pray to it.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that, yeah. You can, there, it's on the internet.
Yeah, Frank likes to look at snowflakes. That's like a hobby.
But I've seen that.
Of course you'd run across that one.
Snowflake test thing.
And there's one that he's got where he took the water and he said, you make me sick, I will kill you. And then he took a picture of it and it looks, you know, horrible, and you know, it looks like it's toxic, you know. And then he's got another one where he takes the water and he says, thank you, and he takes with a beautiful snowflake, and so obviously our thoughts are able to affect these water crystals.
Why am I visualizing L. Ron Hubbard doing an e-meter reading on a tomato plant right now?
Yeah, unfortunately, I believe the SciSoc, the study of the Committee for the Scientific Inquiry of the Paranormal, they challenged him to replicate this in you know, standard laboratory conditions. And so far, he's been unwilling to do it.
Gee, imagine that.
Imagine, yeah.
Well, things don't work when there's skeptics in the room.
Well, of course. I mean, it's all that negative energy, obviously.
It'll make the snowflake cry. It's an energy. I mean, well, you know, because James Randi say, well, he's not in Psychop, but James Randi is a powerful wizard, don't you know?
It's that beard. It really gives
those,
him the,
those pictures of him. He looks like a scary, powerful wizard.
And he has those eyes, and he looks, yeah, definitely. He has a big aura. Not you, but okay. What are some other examples of rationalism in pseudoscience? Well, one easy example I have is creationism in intelligent design. Because basically they're both based on the principle that if something is complex, then it must have been designed. So there's your rationalist principle right there.
Right. Yeah.
And of course we know that's not true.
If they find an oyster on top of Mount Everest,
there's absolutely no
it
relation.
It must mean that it rose with the tide. That's rationalizing.
Are you talking about Ken Hovind?
Well, I'm just saying, you know, it's an example of his rationalizations, and he has a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Another
a five-year-old could understand that.
Another example is astrology. Astrology says, as above, so
below.
So basically the movements of the planets depending on your sign, which is determined by whatever constellation, blah, blah, blah. And that there's somehow...
See, you don't understand astrology. That means that you can't possibly know that it's wrong.
Somehow the movements of the planets reflect movements in our lives. So that's another rationalist principle. It's not true either.
Right.
It's another attempt to systematize our life, our reality, but it's not true. Another example that I mentioned earlier is homeopathy. People used to believe that, well, like cures like actually existed way before homeopathy.
Yeah.
People used to believe that things that looked like an organ were able to cure that organ.
Wow.
Like things that looked like hands or ears or and so on. So there was already that principle. But what homeopathy did was say, well, like cures like applies to function instead of form. So you have this idea of, the basic idea of proving in homeopathy is, if something can induce symptoms in a healthy person, then it will cure those symptoms as a homeopathic remedy.
Put the hair of a dog in a glass of beer if he bit you.
And
drink it.
So that's also a rationalist principle. It's not based on any biological fact.
What I find most interesting about homeopathy is that the preparations of medicines that they make, there's an inverse principle of potency.
Right.
They use when they'll dissolve, you know, an herb or something like that in water. And then dilute it continuously, the tenth power, virtually to the point where there's very little statistical chance that there's actually a single molecule of the original medicine.
Don't forget, you have to shake it from the north to the south a certain number of times, and then from the east to the west a certain number of times.
Right, and somehow that's supposed to be even more potent.
Well, there's the whole concept of the memory of water.
Yeah, what does that mean? There's another. There's one thing that really sort of intrigues me about pseudoscience is how often they sort of converge. How if you're likely to believe one, you're almost more likely to believe, you know, multiple.
Well, sure.
For example, you're talking about creationists and astrologists. Well, Ronald Reagan is a perfect example. You know, he was he believed in creation, and he also believed in astrology.
Mm-hmm.
He had no problem believing in both.
Damn and, Hollywood types.
And with this water pseudoscience, I find that really funny too. I actually, I watch TBN from time to time, the Trinity Broadcast Network, and they've got, at least they used to have a show hosted by Dr. Carl Ball, who the Fluxy River Tracks, you know, he's got this museum down in Glen Rose, Texas.
Yeah.
And he had a show, or has a show, called Creationism in the 21st Century. it's a joke, but I watch it for the humor, mostly. But one episode he had on a couple, is a Christian couple.
Wow.
Who
creation
fell hexagonal water. Hexagonal water before. But it's supposed to be like better for you. It's supposed to be healthier for you than regular water. It's supposed to be that type of water that was around before the flood.
Sure,
yeah.
They
lived so long. And they were on there talking about this hexagonal water, and Carl Ball is on there just nodding along, and they're, you know, basically selling it. I mean, they've got a website where they sell this stuff, and they sell it's basically a blender. They sell this blender. It's like a blender with a water filter built into it, where you put your water in, like any type of water, and turn it on. It just spins the water around through this filter. And this is supposed to cause started to form these hexagonal rings. And, you know, it's supposed to stay hexagonal for something like a week. Like, you just, you know, you keep on drinking. And they said, you know, don't drink too much at once. You know, just drink, you gotta have a glass at once. And basically it's just a blender with a filter on it, but it costs, you know, they're selling it for, like $500, so.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just so funny to me to watch, like, well, here's this guy hyping creationism, and, you know, here we see creationism and water pseudoscience, this hexagonal water bullshit, basically, all mixed up in the same group.
Well, you know, Tammy Faye, she actually was doing a show with Kevin Trudeau when he was doing one of his infomercials. There was Tammy Faye, so there you have it.
I'm not surprised. The creationist worldview in and of itself is not, it's pretty inclusive. I mean, if God created things the way they are, why wouldn't he create it this way or that way? I mean, you can insert pretty much any fancy of your imagination in there. I mean, why couldn't God have created the universe in a way so that astrology is true or homeopathy is true or whatever?
It does leave a lot open for, you know, all types of.
Well, I imagine if you believe that Adam lived for 900 years, you're going to want to...
I mean, it's been proven. Yeah, that's another thing.
But then again, Adam was supposedly punished by God, so why are they trying to...
It's like the dream of living hundreds and hundreds of years like in the Bible. But the only limitation they have is what the Bible says. You're not supposed to use methods of... divination. But you know, they did a study in the Skeptical Inquirer, and they found that people who had religious beliefs were more likely to also have pseudoscientific beliefs.
Yeah, that's not surprising at all.
Yeah, definitely. That's not surprising at all. Well, we only have a little more than a minute.
Okay.
I want to ask you, Zach, before we go, how would you like to be on the live show tomorrow?
That would be fine. Yeah, no problem.
Awesome.
Because I understand that you have a new show where is it exactly?
It's not my show. Okay. Reggie Finley from InfoGuy.com has started up a new show called Evolution 101.
Wow.
Where he just basically wants just basic questions about evolution and evolutionary theory answered sort of on a semi-regular basis. A lot like his Bible Geek show with Bob Price.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's going to have several scientific contributors, and I'm going to be one of them, and I actually did the inaugural show this morning.
Oh, yeah? How did it go?
It went very good, very good.
So we will go ahead and have you on the live show tomorrow to talk about that.
Okay.
And how
great.
It went.
And we all talked out for the week.
So this is pretty much the end of the show.
Pretty much.
We didn't have the time to go through all the...
And basically what we came to conclude is that if they say the word quantum, just go the other way.
Definitely.
Walk slowly out of the room.
Why don't you give our coordinates?
Well, our website is hellboundally.com, of course, and our email address, again, is ally@hellboundally.com, ALLEE.
If you hear the word energy, run. If you hear the word quantum, run. And if you hear the expression quantum energy, kill them for us. Please, that would be a great service.
Unless it has to do with Alex Chu, and if you see him, tell him to send our rings.
We're going to have some good shows in the next weeks. We're going to have Aaron's guest show, and we're also going to have a show with two atheist bloggers. The schedule is not completely fixed, so I can't give a specific date. Don't miss our live show tomorrow. We're going to have a couple of new things.
Yeah.
And this is it. Goodbye, everyone.
See you next week.
Well, of course, even scientific facts are not perfectly exact, but they are as exact as it is humanly possible to make them at the time.
It's a scientific fact, a scientific fact. It has to be correct, it has to be exact, because it is a science.